This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, but in for Amy this morning is Charles Love. He's the co-host of Black and Right. See what they did there? With his colleague, John Anthony, former Illinois State Representative. Saturday is 1 p.m. Inaugural show was this past Saturday, and had a great get with Shelby Steele. And you can hear that show every Saturday at 1 p.m. going forward, so you want to check that out, Charles. And Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete, he's that mannequin from the men's department at the Macy's in Mishawaka who's escaped and is running for president. Our country is under attack from white nationalist terrorism, inspiring murder on our soil, and abetted by weak gun laws. If we're serious about national security, we must summon the courage to name and defeat this evil. I don't think there's any lack of willingness to name the evil with respect to the white supremacist or white supremacy-inspired shooter in El Paso. I don't think there's any unwillingness to name the evil with respect to the shooter in Dayton either, who was apparently not inspired, not particularly inspired by politics as far as we know. I mean, he's made political statements, but it doesn't seem like necessarily that's what inspired him to open fire and that into the crowd as he did, killing 9 and wounding 27 more. Seems like it's a bit more complicated. Weak gun laws? I'll tell you what, you know, we're going to hear from the president at 9 a.m. this morning, and he's already sort of telegraphed a desire to work, Republicans, Democrats, to work on more rigorous background checks. He wants to twin that with something on in the area of immigration reform, so we'll see how that goes. But it seems to me one of the best arguments against gun control for the law-abiding gun bans, which is really what the left wants with respect to people who are peaceful and law-abiding, the ability to protect themselves. One of the best arguments is the sort of people this culture is producing. Across the spectrum, really, all kinds of pathologies and indulgences and pathologies. That was certainly on display with respect to those who desire to lead this country politically. So they're certainly not excluded from this conversation in terms of who was helping and who was engaged in cheap demagoguery. Mayor Pete, hardly the only one. Listen to Bobby O'Rourke over the weekend leading the sprint to blame Trump for what happened in El Paso specifically. Somehow I assume they'll tag Dayton on him too.
In addition to red flag laws, we've got to acknowledge the hatred, the open racism that we're seeing. There's an environment of it in the United States. We see it on Fox News. We see it on the internet. But we also see it from our commander in chief. And he is encouraging this. He doesn't just tolerate it. He encourages it. Calling Mexican immigrants rapists and criminals, warning of an invasion at our border, seeking to ban all people of one religion. Folks are responding to this. It doesn't just offend us. It encourages the kind of violence that we're seeing, including in my hometown of El Paso yesterday.
I mean, there's just so much inaccurate about that statement and incendiary. And by the way, he wasn't done there, as we've talked about before. Then he later went on to compare Trump to the Third Reich.
Yeah.
Not alone. Cory Booker knows who's responsible for the 20 dead and dozens injured in El Paso.
We have a president of the United States who is particularly responsible. I, in my faith, have this idea that you reap what you sow, and he is sowing seeds of hatred in our country. And this harvest of hate violence that we're seeing right now lies at his feet. When you have the president from the highest moral office in our land talking about invasions and infestations and shithole countries, the kind of things that come out of his mouth that so harm the moral fabric of our nation, he is responsible. He's responsible when he has taken no action whatsoever to even condemn white supremacy, even when his own FBI is talking about this being sourcing major parts of our problem. So we have a president who is responsible, who is not taking that responsibility and is doing a nothing to address the deepening crisis in our country of this kind of violence.
You can expect to hear more of that line of argumentation in the coming weeks from all the POTUS aspirants. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined again by Cheryl Chumley. She's the online opinion editor for The Washington Times and author of The Devil in D.C., Winning Back the Country from the Beast in Washington. Cheryl, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, both of you, Dan, Charles.
So how have you processed what you've been hearing in terms of assigning responsibility to President Trump for particularly what happened in El Paso?
The same way I always do when a shooting like this occurs. It's just as predictable as the left is about coming out and saying that it's the fault of the guns and we need to kill the Second Amendment. I've been out there saying that this whole issue comes back to one basic theme, and it's that we've removed God from society. That's why we have fatherless families. That's why we have broken homes. That's why we have drug use and mass prescription of behavior-inducing drugs and so forth. And all those things contribute to the mental illness that leads to the shootings that we've been seeing.
Well, I think that's really important what you're saying. Because now you're talking about solutions and getting down to the brass tacks of the problem. I think that if you think about they say guns is the gun problem, and they say it's a mental health problem, but no one talks culture, and I'm all about the culture. And I want your thoughts on this. So they say we have about 300 million guns in the country, but for years we've had over 100 million, and so that's not new. And it's not new that we have mental health problems. I mean, that didn't just happen in the last 5 or 10 years. So we have to, as a society, ask ourselves, so we have these two problems have been around for years. We also have more money, more information, more charities, more laws, and more access to resources than we've ever had before. But we didn't have these shootings in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. So what is the one thing common denominator that's changed? And I think you're right. So what do you think we need to do to get people to actually talk about that and focus on that rather than guns and just mental health?
Well, I do have a column coming out in tomorrow's paper in the Washington Times called Why Shooters Shoot, where I go into this backed with statistics. And there's no way around it. You cannot separate the culture from what's going on in America right now. And if the problem is that we turned our back on God, and as you see from reading Pew statistics and stuff like that, the polls, the rise of the nuns, the rise of the non-religious in this country, fueled largely through the liberal youth of America, the solution is to talk about putting God back in the public arena. When the left comes out and decries and mocks and disdains and sues over public mentions of God, public prayers, we who of faith in this country need to push back just as hard. Things like moments of silence and prayer in school. There is a movement that I just wrote about a month ago that's taking place in this country to put these things back in school. These are all small steps, but you know, we didn't get here overnight, and we didn't get here because we have guns. We got here because of the moral decay of society, which, like it or not, that's due to our spiritual decay.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, though, that doesn't provide a ready-made answer of how we're going to prevent this from happening tomorrow and next week and next month. And so people just don't want to talk about it. I mean, we're talking about the two mass shootings that everybody's talking about, but here in Chicago, there was a third this weekend. We had the numbers keep going up. Seven shot and killed, 55 shot and injured. You know, you consider that a pretty big mass shooting. I mean, unfortunately, it's become sort of normal in Chicago, and so it doesn't even get talked about. It barely gets talked about here, much less outside the city. And it's sort of the same dynamic. You have pronouncements from law enforcement, from the politicians about how, you know, that's enough. Now we're really going to get serious about it. And there's nothing you can get serious with because you can't put back together Humpty Dumpty. You can't put back together the families that you've incentivized to break up over the last 50 years.
You're right, but you can do common sense things. And, you know, just at my newspaper, just a couple of days ago, we had this presentation from a law enforcement official talking about active shooter situations and how we, as employees of a newspaper, could defend ourselves. These types of discussions are happening all over America, and that's good. But the two-hour presentation I listened to from this police officer all pointed back to one issue, and that was the need for better right to carry laws. The fact is, it takes minutes for law enforcement to respond to these active shooter situations, and within those minutes, dozens can be killed. And yet, if we have the right to carry in these areas that are currently prohibited from carrying, those numbers could go down dramatically. I am all in favor of arming teachers. I'm all in favor of guns being allowed into churches. And in lieu of that, I'm all in favor of armed presences at these facilities. We need that because that's the pragmatic, ugly look at the reality we're facing right now.
She is Cheryl Chumley. She's the online opinion editor for The Washington Times, the author of The Devil in D.C., Winning Back the Country from the Beast in Washington. Cheryl, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And she joined us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Charles Love. And for Amy J. this morning, Charles Love, Saturdays, 1 p.m., he co-hosts a new program here on AM 560 with former State Representative John Anthony called Black and Right. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Get your reactions to what Cheryl Chumley had to say about the loss of faith in this country. Welfare state that has incentivized the breakup of family. Also, this issue of agency and the idea you play cheap sort of guilt by association politics in a lot of different directions to remove agency from people. That's what the welfare state does. Very dangerous game you're playing when you remove agency from people and you start to say, his words made that guy do something terrible. And if you're going to play that game, then you have to play it in every direction. The left, of course, unbounded by their hypocrisy, is not. Something else, though, coming from the right. Dan Patrick, not that Dan Patrick, the lieutenant governor from Texas, and also Kevin McCarthy, the House Minority Leader, were on the Sunday talk shows this weekend talking about violent video games. Listen to, among other things, listen to what Dan Patrick had to say on Fox and Friends.
And I look at this evil act, and let's condemn it for what it is. Evil. Evil. And I say, how long are we going to let, for example, and ignore at the federal level particularly, where they can do something about the video game industry? You know, in this manifesto that we believe is from the shooter, this manifesto, he talks about living out his super soldier fantasy on Call of Duty. We know that the video game industry is bigger than the movie industry and the music industry combined. And there have been studies that say it impacts people and studies that says it does not. But I look at the common denominators as a 60-some-year-old father and grandfather myself. What's changed in this country? We've always had guns. We've always had evil. But what's changed where we see this rash of shooting? And I see a video game industry that teaches young people to kill. You know, in his manifesto, he said this is not a Republican or Democrat thing because he was concerned about robots and environment and immigrants. Obviously, a hate crime, I think, in my view, against immigrants from this young man. Just my view. We haven't had an official report on that. And I don't mean to talk on, but I'm just my heart is so heavy this morning because I think where are we as a country? Yeah. I look at social media, the violence of just bullying people on social media every day, and we turn our head and we allow it. I look at on a Sunday morning when most of your viewers right now, half of the country are getting ready to go to church, and yet tomorrow we won't let our kids even pray in our schools. We have to look at ourselves as a nation. It's many factors that go into these shooting, many factors. And it's not a time to politicize, it's a time to look deep inside of who we are as a country, where we no longer salute our flag or we throw water on law enforcement. And thank God we have law enforcement. Thank God we have them in times like this. And so it's a lot of factors that go on that we have to take a long look at who we are as a nation and where we want to go and what we're going to tolerate.
Angry young men, disconnected from civil society because of video games or online bullying. That's not terribly persuasive to me. There's just not a lot of research to back up the violent video game claim. It's not to say that's necessarily a productive behavior, but I mean, look, I was killing space aliens at arcades when I was growing up too. Don't become a shooter. Even the very realistic war games like Call of Duty, obviously millions and millions of kids play them and they never break the law. So there's something larger at play. And, you know, we see this every day, the pathology in Chicago. Again, we just mentioned it in our conversation with Cheryl. From Cheryl Chumley from Washington Times, 55 shots, 7 dead in Chicago just this weekend.
Right. Well, on this video game piece, I'm kind of somewhere in the middle, so I understand that it's definitely not the issue. I don't think we should go. He's like, they need to do something about it. I'm not going to go that far. But I will say it's kind of a, I'm all about the culture, but it's kind of an accelerant, right? So if you have that perfect cocktail already, so you and I can play video games all the time. For me, at the advent of gangster rap, I used to listen to it, but I looked at it like entertainment. I'd laugh. Look at the silly stuff he said.
Right.
But if you have that cocktail of the person who's in a single home, who's removed from God and all these other things, and then you sprinkle that on top, it can make the fire bigger. But I definitely wouldn't say blame it. So
yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. I think it's an accelerant. It's something, right. You have this tinder,
mm-hmm.
and this can perhaps be something that lights it. A Wall Street Journal editorial over the weekend, The Killers in Our Midst, makes a point that I don't think, again, we talk enough about. And it's not just churches. The mediating institutions in civil society that help individuals form cultural and social attachments. Churches, yes. Businesses, social clubs, charitable groups. It can be something as simple as a bowling league. And especially, of course, the family. When those little platoons of democracy, starting with the family, break down, then you have kids living in isolation, no mediating influence, adult influences, no mediating social influences. They get gaslighted by some idiotic book online or rants online from some supremacist of any sort, whether it's white or something else. And you have people that, like you say, have other problems all coming together to form this perfect cocktail, poisonous cocktail. And the expression is devastating. So you always try to start with premises or building blocks of civilization and civil society. And what kind of health or lack of health do we find those mediating institutions in at this point? How much confidence and trust do people place in those mediating institutions beyond their local bowling league with colleagues? But, that integration of kids into civil society, it seems to me there's a breakdown there, at least for some, and that breakdown is catastrophic.
Coming up next, it's me, Mike Gallagher, right after Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning is Charles Love. He's the co-host of a new program that airs Saturdays at 1 p.m. on AM 560 called Black and Right. He co-hosts with John Anthony, former Illinois State Representative, and started off with a great show on Saturday featuring Shelby Steele, interview with Shelby Steele. And so, again, Saturdays 1 p.m., you want to check them out. And also, just in terms of, these tragic events, we do have acts of heroism, talking about the shootings over the weekend. And in El Paso, there was a man that you should hear about. It's nice to talk about the Samaritanism that's sort of instinctive, I think, in Americans. But it gets drowned out by the din of cheap binary political chatter on the cable news networks. So here from Glenn Oakley. Glenn Oakley was going to the Foot Locker in the mall where that Walmart is, the shopping mall that the El Paso shooter shot up. And Glenn Oakley happens to be military, 1st Armored Division out of Fort Bliss in Texas. And here's how he reacted once he understood what was happening.
A little kid runs in and talking about acting shirt at Walmart, but being the guy that's that works there, we're just like, he's a kid, so we didn't believe him. So I walk out the mall, go to Foot Locker. I hear, bah, bah. I got my lights carried, so I pull my gun out. And I just started hiding. They closed the Foot Locker. And some people went there, they were so scared, they just lifted the cage, and they just dipped. So I ran with them, and I just tried to make my way to the parking lot. And I see a whole bunch of kids just running around, you know, without their parents and stuff. So I got my bag in my hand. I'm trying to pick them up one more, as many as I can, just run out. But they're so, like, you know, anxious. They're, like, jumping out of my hand. So ain't much I could do for the kids. So I just made my way out. And when I got out, I guess one of the cops thought I was a shooter or something. So I had to, like, show him my clip and stuff, show him it was the full guy. I got my life scared. He said I was fine. Go out. I called a friend, told him to come pick up my gun. And I'm here now, but... It was just a whole bunch of kids up in there. I'm sorry, I'm shaking. But it was a whole bunch of kids in there. And I just hope nothing happens to the kids. They were out their parents and stuff. And I tried to pick up as many as I could and bring them out with me.
So, good guy with a gun runs and picks up a bunch, as many kids as he could, as he was describing, who were wandering around the mall without their parents because, of course, of the chaos of the situation. Good guy with a gun. Good guys with guns in Dayton that put down that shooter in under a minute. The additional carnage that could have been inflicted if they weren't there and didn't react as quickly as they did. And also just the stories coming out of El Paso that have nothing to do with politics, which, of course, will dominate the analysis of this. El Paso puts a word out for blood donations because, of course, of the medical facilities overwhelmed by the number of injured that they're trying to treat. And immediately, and the local stations had shots of the crowds, immediately lines around the block to donate blood to the local medical centers in El Paso that were treating the injured. So, you know, it reminds you there's another dynamic at play than the one that you see playing out on the Sunday talkies. Sort of consistent with that, though this may be less of a unifying event just based on the politics of it, but this is very interesting. I saw this at the blockclub.com, Block Club Chicago, actually blockclubchicago.org, sort of a local outlet. Michigan man brings his large, loud, pro-Trump Floyd to downtown streets, annoying Chicagoans. So Rob Cordes is calling this his Uniting America tour. He's got this big Trump float that has Trump's name in big letters, just like Trump likes it, with drain the swamp, secure America's border, making America great again, list of the essentially the platform headers on the float as well. This was characterized by one. Holly Prindle was walking away from the lakefront Wednesday last week when she suddenly heard Aretha Franklin's Think over a loudspeaker. Good song choice. She looked up, spotted a parade-style float heading down Michigan Avenue emblazoned with big, bold letters, Trump and Build the Wall. She was confused as to why the float's creator chose this venue to display his political statement. You're in Chicago, Holly Prindle said, talking out loud. I guess she hasn't heard from Jussie Smollett that this is MAGA country. For more on the topic, we're pleased to be joined by Rob Cordes, the man behind Trump Unity Bridge. Rob, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Good morning. How is everybody doing today?
Good morning. So how is the coast-to-coast, border-to-border Unity Bridge campaign going? How were you received last week in Chicago?
I was received very, very well, and I wish this lady would have came and talked to me, or some of the media would, like you guys did, because I was in Chicago, and I go to different cities because a lot of Americans need to be educated to learn to use common sense and to learn the facts before they jump to conclusions and make a comment. You know, and we were playing Aretha Franklin Think because we want people to think about President Trump, what he's doing. We want him to judge. We'd like people to judge him by his achievements and accomplishments, not by what other people say about him. And we want them to think about the policies, like what would the wall do for us? You know, can somebody go jump and climb over it? Yes, probably. But the wall will slow them down. We give the opportunity for them to be detained because they'll have video surveillance, you know, and probably seismic vibration sensors and all sorts of new technology there. And we want America to be a great country forever and ever. And I want to do my part to unite America on positive messages, like the ones that are on the Trump Unity Bridge, that came from people just like you all over America, from Democrats, Republicans, independents, from all 50 states. And we want people to share positive messages, put their energy into that, so that we can have character, integrity, patriotism in every home.
Has the float suffered any vandalism during your tour?
Not in recent years, but the day before the inauguration, we were in Arlington, Virginia, and we had some people that were supposed to watch it, and it was vandalized then. But that's the only time it's really been vandalized.
Keep that thing moving, right? I got to stick and move.
Yeah.
Well,
people have come by and somebody tried punching it, and they hurt their hand. It was made by Americans, built tough, like my Chevy truck that I tore with.
And what was the inspiration to do this in the first place, and your ability to do this too, take time off from work or whatever it is you're doing to focus on trying to unify the country through a float?
Well, it's pretty interesting and simple. I went through a divorce. My wife got the house, and I took the bridge going over the river. The bridge was built by my uncle and my father, and my uncle was a union welder for the auto workers for General Motors, and so he got his buddies. They built the bridge to go over my river, and then it got stolen from. I had it on a property, and a building company stole it to put on their building site that they were building, and then I put an internet campaign and did a press conference. And it went around the world in 24 hours. We found it in 48 hours. It was located. People said, "Oh, we saw that here." So we got it back, and I put it at my restaurant in Green Oak Township, Whitmore Lake. And the city said that it was an illegal bridge in the garden. It was just sitting on the ground, and that people could die because the zoning department didn't look at it, and the planning commission and the site plan wasn't approved to put it in the garden. So they said people could get hurt and die on it. So I had to remove it. So I took it to a welder and asked them to put wheels on it and a tongue on it. I want to make it a mobile unity bridge for people to get married on, for a wedding bridge, so you can take it to your garden and stuff like that. Okay?
I did
weddings.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did weddings. They said, I'll take it, put it in somebody's backyard, put the bride and groom's name on it, put flowers on it, have the wedding bridge.
Yeah, of course.
Right? And that, So then over the next few days, I was already Trumping with my SUV, driving around with Trump signs on it, promoting President Trump with the truck, going to rallies and supporting. And I woke up one morning, and the Pope was saying, Trump needs to be building bridges, not walls. And the media was saying, if Trump thinks he's going to get elected, he has to beat out 17 of the greatest politicians in American history that are all experienced. And they're like, good luck, Trump, sarcastically. So I just woke up the next morning and said, wait a minute. I'm going to make it the Trump Unity Bridge. The Pope said build bridges, not walls, so I'm on a mission from God to make America great again and support President Trump's agenda.
This is some cross between Field of Dreams and Blues Brothers. Yeah, this is really something. So how many have you had any actual weddings on the bridge? The Unity Bridge?
We haven't had a wedding yet. I haven't promoted it that much. But now that I'm on your show,
sure.
Everybody in America, if somebody wants to get married on the Trump Unity Bridge, we will meet with you, and there'll be no charge for it. We'll just try to come to you. If you're somewhere in way far away in the country, if it's in our route, we'll stop for free. If not, maybe chip in for some gas money so we can do the first wedding on the Trump Unity Bridge.
Yeah, we're talking to Rob Cordes. We're talking to Rob Cordes, the man behind Trump's Unity Bridge. It made a recent visit to Chicago and escaped with his life, which is always a positive. Let me ask you though: Were you political at all before Trump? Is this or is this like your first foray into politics and with both feet because of Trump?
I was never in politics before this. Mm-hmm. I was patriotic and voted, stood for the Pledge of Allegiance, and did all my appropriate things, removed my hat, and I have pride and manners. I open a door for a lady and people when I'm going into a restaurant or a store, and just kind and courteous, normal person, and that's the way I'm trying to hope that we can get the education system to teach that. Because if you look at Chicago and you look at what Obama did for 8 years to help the people of Chicago and to cut the murder rate and to teach people integrity and American pride and manners, he didn't do anything for Chicago. He just took cash from them and he went in with a few million bucks, and now he has tons of millions of bucks. He's went in a wealthy man. Now he's extremely wealthy. I'm not very proud of what he did.
Is your son involved in this Unity Bridge tour as well?
My son has supported me. He helped me build it. He started when he was 16, and one of the things that got him going on this was he went to school. He was the only kid in his class that stood for the Pledge of Allegiance as a senior in high school. And when I found out about that, and I called the school and the principal, that's what got me going on the education system, is the principal and the teacher were like, oh, well, we tell the kids that they make their own choices and they do what they want when it comes to things like that and showing integrity and pride. And I went, well, wait a minute. When we go to school, we're supposed to learn character, integrity, and pride. And the teachers aren't teaching it. They're saying, do what you want. Be a goofball, slough off, That didn't make sense to me. Don't show patriotism. And so that got me going. And then my son actually put together a speech, and he spoke at a free speech rally on the steps of the Capitol in Lansing, Michigan. And he just hit it out of the park. He gave a great speech, told his story, and that's what got his speech was awesome. And then he also spoke on the at the Moore rally, the mother of all rallies, on the lawn at the our National Mall in Washington. So now he's spoken a few times, but he's big on education. He's big on pride and integrity, and he's big on the whole America First agenda, and he supports it. And
all
he
right.
supports kindness to people. Share the goodness of God. If you don't believe in God, show us what you've got for your goodness. Stop this violence, and let's make America a better place.
All right. He is he's Robert Corris, the man behind the Trump Unity Bridge. He's promoting President Trump, coming to a locale near you. You can follow Rob's travels with his Unity Bridge float. Robert Corris, Cortis, robertcortis.com. Robert, good luck. Safe travels out there.
Hey, look for us. We're going to be on Hollywood Boulevard, I think, on August 15th. We'll be there with the Trump Unity Bridge right in front of Donald Trump Star, so come check us out.
Wear a helmet for that one. Thanks, Robert. Appreciate it. And you joined us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560.